Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Starting with the Cowboys. Seems like a good thing, right? Anytime you talk about the Cowboys, it's a good thing, no matter where you come out on them. So Jerry Jones had a press conference to open training camp in Oxnard yesterday. I love it when the Cowboys are in SoCal. But the problem with yesterday and that presser was the headlines were not about Ezekiel Elliott or about replacing Dez Bryant or whether or not Dak Prescott would return to the glory of his rookie year. No, the post-press conference buzz was not even about the NFC East and whether the Cowboys had what it took to rip it. So, in the words of that classic Monday Night Football intro song, are you ready for some foot discussions about league policy on standing versus kneeling during the national anthem? No! Because that's where we are yet again. Once again, instead of Jarrah's opening presser being focused on football, it was focused on the national anthem. You know, because what fans really want to hear just before the start of the football season is not football. It's about a policy regarding where players can and cannot be during the playing of the national anthem. Are you kidding me about this? The protests were fading as a topic last season. The topic of the protests, not the issues that were being protested, but the topic. But then for some reason, the league decided to hit it with the paddles in May with a new policy that would require anyone not standing to remain in the locker room. Now, that was a bad idea. Then there was the leak of the Miami Dolphins policy last week that would potentially suspend players who protested social injustices for games. That was an even worse idea. And now here comes Jarrah, saying that the league policy of allowing players to stay in the locker room is not going to fly in Dallas.
Our policy is that you stand at the anthem, toe on the line.
And that is the worst idea yet. The head of the biggest team in the league saying, screw the league policy. This is what we're going to do right here. I don't give a damn what the league says. And as for the ongoing discussions by the league and the Players Association to discuss the policy, Jarrah is really not interested in what any of them have to say about it.
It did not impact our position, my position relative to the Cowboys, just as the vote didn't impact that the league made. Our position is real clear as far as you should stand.
What's real clear is what he's saying is, I don't give a damn about what's been discussed. I don't give a damn what the league said. I don't give a damn what the Players Association said. That doesn't matter to me at all. It's immaterial. But honestly, to me, the worst idea is talking about it at all. And the league can't stop talking about it. They're talking about player protests more than the players are talking about it. And every time they talk, it only gets worse. Look, everybody has pretty much decided where they come out on the issue. Some fans support the players' right to protest social injustice. Some fans don't. But the league continuing to talk about it and continuing to puke all over itself as they do it is not making it better. Jarrah is the latest one to do it. And forget for a second whether there's a point of having a league policy if Jerry Jones is going to compel particular behavior. Forget whether it's legal. Forget whether Jerry is going to ask concession stand workers to stop selling beer and pizza during the national anthem. The bigger topic is there are so many other topics to be talking about, but the league keeps bringing it back to the national anthem. And for who? For what? Every time a team does something that brings this thing back into the spotlight, it's like going to a concert and then hearing the lead singer of your favorite band say, and now, here's something off our new album. No! Man, play the freaking hits. Play the freaking hits. Talk about Dak Prescott. Talk about Jason Garrett. Hell, talk about crippled crickets and circumcising mosquitoes. Talk about all that before you talk about the national anthem, because it ain't helping them. It's hurting them. And I know that Jerry said, quote, I like everybody. would like for it to go away. Yeah, well, not nearly as much as the players who are protesting injustices would like those injustices to go away. But that aside, if you really want to go away, why do you keep bringing it up? Here's an idea. If you want the topic to go away, stop talking about the topic. Stop deviating from league policy, which not only continues the topic, but it makes the topic even bigger. The topic that you yourself say you want to go away. In other words, stop being you. Stop being you. Stop crippling crickets and stop trying to circumcise mosquitoes. Just stop. Stop bringing it up. We are joined by head coach Charlie Strong. Charlie, it's so good to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. Thank you for having me on.
It's great to have you back. So you're coming off that 10-win season that included a bowl win, a top 25 finish, and the only two losses, Charlie, came on late touchdowns. So when you look back on last season, what kind of thoughts do you have, and how did it help lay the foundation for what you want to build there?
Well, you know, I was very fortunate. I was able to take over a program that Willie Taggart had. I did a great job of recruiting, and it was 25 seniors in the program. The quarterback was very dynamic, and he was a guy that could create a lot of plays for us on offense. And then defensively, I had some really good defensive linemen up front. Now, what has happened, all those guys are gone now. So now it's about rebuilding, and not so much rebuilding. We have enough players in place where we can step into it, and now it's time for them to take over.
You know, you talk about the quarterback being dynamic. Quentin Flowers was certainly that. He's moved on to the NFL. So when you evaluate the possible players to take over that spot, what are you looking for in your starting quarterback?
Well, you really, who can take the team and lead the team, and the team have enough respect and they believe in him where he's gonna challenge them. And not only challenge them, but challenge himself and just go lead the team. So I have three guys in place right now. I have Blake Barnett, who transferred in here from Arizona State. Oladokun is Chris, who's been here. And so it's more of, and then Brett King's other quarterback. So all three of them will get a chance to go compete and go win the position.
Charlie Strong, my guest. You know, Charlie, obviously I'm not there, so let me ask you about this and tell me I'm wrong. When you've got a guy like Flowers, I mean a special kind of player like Flowers, is there not a tendency for maybe guys to get a little bit relaxed and feel like if we get in a jam, Q will get us out of it? Is that a possibility? Does that kind of exist? And how do you make sure that if it does, that's not a part of the mentality of the team?
Well, it was a mentality last year because he had won so many games and he had done so many things. And guys kind of, you get relaxed because they watch him. And even on defense, they felt like we never were going to lose because Q had, once he had a ball in his hands, that we were going to be able to go move it. So now you lose him. So it's going to take a total team effort. So guys are going to have to work together and guys are going to, you could be able to step up, and they're going to have to make plays. You know, defensively, we're going to have to stop people. Offense, we've got to generate enough offense to score points.
USF head coach Charlie Strong, my guest. In terms of recruiting, which you brought up, your D coordinator, Brian Jean-Marie, told The Athletic, when it comes to you and recruiting in Florida, quote, I wouldn't say this in front of him. I don't want to stroke his ego anymore, but he's kind of like the dean of the state when it comes to recruiting. Charlie, I know you're laughing already, but how big of an advantage is that for you?
Well, Jim, what's great is I come back to a state, and so I spent a lot of time at the University of Florida, and a lot of these coaches are still the head coaches at a number of these programs. You know, right here in the state of, in the city of Tampa, you know, I still, Garcia is still at Hillsboro. Sayo was a Jesuit. Now he is, he's still here in the city. So you have guys that are still around, you know, Wieners at Plant, and then you go down the street, and at Lakeland, Castle's been there forever. So I have a relationship with those coaches, and whenever they have a player, they know who I am, so you can pick up the phone and make a call.
Yeah, it's funny, Charlie, because when you lay it out like that, it sounds like you've been there your whole life, but of course, you're originally from Arkansas, but when you come back to Florida the way you have, where you coached and recruited for so long, does it feel like a homecoming?
Oh, it does, and what was great is that just spending a number of years here, and you're right, I grew up in Arkansas, and people don't even realize that. They think I'm from Florida.
Right.
So I had to tell them, no, I'm not. I'm from the state of Arkansas.
Charlie Strong, my guest. That's really funny to me. So when you have the success that you had last season, obviously your name is going to come up for a number of head coaching jobs, but you did choose to stay at USF. How come?
But you know what it is? I just want to build a program. And what has happened here, we've never won a conference championship. And you just want have continuity within your staff. We lost no staff members. So I brought some of them with me, Texas, and now so we've been together for a number of years. But these players here, they deserve to be coached by really good coaches, and they want to win. So the thing you want to do is just make sure you do grow and develop them and just build a program.
Now, if you stay ready, you never have to get ready. Hurricane season is underway across most of the country, bringing extreme wind and rain with little to no warning. It is critical to make sure your generators, power washers, chainsaws, John boats, and other emergency equipment are ready to use when you need them most. Whether you live in a high-impact area or not, planning in advance is a crucial step in hurricane preparedness. Stabil, America's number one fuel stabilizer and ethanol treatment, making sure your equipment starts when you need it the most. Charlie Strong, my guest. All right, so we mentioned and talked about some of the guys who left. Why don't we talk about a couple of guys who are coming back, starting with your tight end, Mitchell Wilcox. He's on the Mackey Award watch list. I know you're extremely high on him. What makes him so special, and what does he bring to your offense?
You know, I am extremely high on Wilcox. I think he's an unbelievable player, and he's a next-level player. The thing he works, and he is so athletic, a guy that you can spread him out, and he can create a mismatch for a linebacker. And then you can put him in a box, and he can move, and he can block, and he's physical enough to get in front of people and move them. But Wilcox, he has all the twos, and he knows that how good he is, but he also knows that he needs to continue to work to get better.
Now, Charlie, I'm also curious about running back Elijah Mack. For instance, there was a lot of buzz when he first arrived on campus, and maybe last season didn't go the way that he would have expected. And you talked about how in the spring there was a conversation you had with him that may have been a turning point. Can you share what that was about? Was it about, for instance, X's and O's or maybe something else?
No, you know, Jim, it wasn't X's and O's. And I just wanted to I saw a young man there, and he was kind of not so much lost, but he's just trying to find himself. And so we sat down and had a conversation, and I said, you're going to be as good as you want to be, but it's going to be totally up to you. And I said, a lot of times decisions that we make put us in a bad place or it puts us in a good place. And so you got to go about your work. He's a pounder. I mean, he's a guy that runs behind his pads. He's just got to learn how to make a move on a guy, because I told him, you're going to run into a wall. You keep on trying to run over people. But I'm really excited about Mack, and I just see him making a change, not only on the field but off the field, and had an unbelievable semester academically. So you see him making that turn.
Charlie Strong joining us. So what's that like, Charlie? I mean, obviously you need to win football games, but you're in this also to develop relationships with players and help them grow both on and off the field. So when you challenge somebody like that and then you see him make that turn and you see him rise and respond as a head coach and a leader of young men, what's that feel like to you?
Oh, you get an unbelievable feeling. And I tell not only our coaches, I tell our players, even recruits, you know, I said, I have 10 coaches. They coach the X's and O's. My job is to develop young men, because I want them to be successful, because there's going to be a life after football. So when they have their life after football, are we giving them the right value so that they can go be successful in life and go impact society?
Charlie, I know you and Derek Brooks have spent some time fundraising. You know, I've been around a lot of guys in my career. Rare is the guy who's quite like Derek Brooks in the way he carries himself, the way he approaches his work, his process. I mean, you could say he's a man's man. Whatever it is, guys are kind of awed by his presence. What's it been like to work and collaborate with Derek Brooks?
Oh, it's unbelievable. And you're right, guys, he is a man's man. You look at the success that he's had, and he never even talks about it. And I let him talk to my team and be around the team, and then him and I go out in the community and do a lot of things together. But it's been great just being around him and just watching how he carries himself and just his whole work ethic. And you can see why, Jim, that he has been successful, how he's put himself in the position he has put himself in, because he knows how to talk to people and he respects people. And it's all about relationships. And when you walk in with D. Brooks, you know that you're going to get a conversation and you're going to be able to sit at the table.
Charlie, I mean, that's exactly it. I can remember towards the end of his career, and again, the guy was like larger than life, future Hall of Famer, and I remember he said this to me, hey, Jim, you've done this a long time. You've had some success doing this. I'm thinking about maybe dabbling in the media. Can I pick your brain on a few things? And all I could think, Charlie, was, wait, what? Derek Brooke wants to pick my brain on something?
Yes. Hey, Jim, we go in meetings, and he has a pad in his hand. And so we'll meet with someone who's been successful, and he'll sit and ask him, say, listen, you've been doing this. You've had success for all these years. Your business is growing. How do you do it?
Right.
And it's amazing. Like, he asks those questions. And like you said, there's a guy that has done it, and we've seen him do it at the highest level.
It's amazing. So one last thought. The program, Charlie, is rolling, really rolling right now, and you're getting after it in recruiting. How much better can it and will it be when you have an indoor facility?
Oh, it's going to be a change for us. It's a program changer. And if you look at college football, and that's what it is right now with all programs, facilities, everyone's building facilities, and they're all using them for recruiting. And I'm sitting in a great place because you're looking at Tampa, you're looking at the state of Florida, the recruits are right here. So it's easy for me to go out and recruit and go find them. But with this facility, it's going to be a program changer for us, and we're going to really take off. You're right. Right now, we haven't even scratched the surface on how good we can be.
Facility is huge, and you've got all that talent right there in your backyard, and nobody knows that neighborhood better than you. Charlie Strong's the head football coach at USF, coming off a big first season, 10-2 when they open up on September 1st. Charlie, great to get caught up. Always nice to have you on the program, and always good to talk football with you.
Oh, it is, and thank you for having me on.
If you're going on vacation this summer, do not forget to pack the Zipa. Zipa is spelled Z-Y-P-P-A-H. Z-Y-P-P-A-H. It's actually Happy Z spelled backwards. Now, if you go to bed with a Zipa, you wake up with Happy Z's. Did you know that one night of bad sleep can ruin your entire day? Are you planning a summer vacation? You do not want to ruin the entire vacation with snoring all night long. Vacations are supposed to be a time for rest and recovery and relaxation. Well, how do you expect to get any rest if there's somebody snoring all night? What if that somebody is you? If you're snoring, you're not sleeping, and neither is anybody else. This is why you need to get a Zipa before you leave on vacation. If you or somebody you know snores, just go to Zipa.com. Zipa is guaranteed to stop snoring. You've got nothing to lose. If you're not happy for any reason at all, just return it, get a full refund. Snoring is rude, it's disrespectful, and it's offensive because there is a solution. Do not ruin another summer vacation with snoring. Get your Zipa today by going to Zipa.com. Zipa.com. Ensure you and everybody around you has a great summer vacation. This involves members of the Gators football team and a gambler nicknamed Tay Bang. Tay? BB guns that allegedly look like real guns and a frying pan used as a weapon. A dude weaponizing a frying pan. Have I got your attention now? That's what I thought. And yeah, I've seen that video of that brawl in that McDonald's where that one manager or that one employee beat down that other girl. I've seen that. You can stop sending me that. I've seen that. I'm not here to talk about that. I am here to talk about the Gators and some dude weaponizing a frying pan. Because according to First Coast News, a number of Florida football players are in trouble following an on-campus incident involving football players and that gambler. Now, the gambler is Devontae Zachary, but he's also known as Tay Bang. According to FCN, Tay and some colleagues were waiting for the players near the dorms. There was an initial confrontation, but the players then drove away. Smart, right? Leave it alone. Get the hell out of there. Take yourself out of a bad situation. Except, as they departed, the police report indicates that a player or players could be heard shouting, "We're coming back strapped." Quote, unquote, "We're coming back strapped." Sure enough, according to a witness, they came back strapped. A second confrontation took place. Tay told police that one player was holding, quote, some sort of assault rifle and some others were holding rocks. Strapping rocks and an assault rifle. So at that point, things were about to get a little weird. Because during an interview with the University Police, one player said he had, quote, a good relationship with Zachary, a.k.a. Tay. But when they began losing, Tay would call them, quote, garbage. And that's when things went south. Apparently, Tay would complain about losing money after he bet on their football games. Now, it's at this point in the story, before we even get to a guy weaponizing a frying pan, which I can't wait to get to. I need to take one moment, though, to address any and all gamblers on Florida football in 2017. Listen, gambling is becoming legal and accepted. I'm not here to crack on that at all. I'm not here to crack on gambling, especially legalized gambling, especially when I own thoroughbred horses. I'm here to crack on gambling on Florida football in 2017. That's what I'm here to crack on. This dude would complain about losing money after he bet on football games involving the 2017 Florida Gators. Let me tell you something else. The 2017 Florida Gators were garbage. Tay was right about that. There is a reason they were 4-7. There's a reason they lost 6 of their last 7 games. It's because the reason is they were complete and utter garbage. Tay is right. They were. How many different garbage drops do you have, Alvy? They were garbage. But you know what else is garbage? Betting on a garbage team and expecting non-garbage results. Garbage in, garbage out. Garbage in, garbage out. Come on, Tay. You know that, Tay. Garbage. They didn't even crack the top 100 in points per game against FBS opponents. What were you doing betting on them? Unless you were betting against them or taking the under, then that's on you, not them. You said it yourself. They were garbage.
Garbage.
So at a certain point, that becomes a Tay problem, not a Gator problem. But apparently, it did become a Gator problem back in May during the confrontation. Now, in fairness, the players in question initially denied any involvement in the incident. And according to First Coast News, during an initial search, police did not find any bullets. But, quote, they did find a frying pan, according to the report. It was seen on camera being used by one of the athletes during the confrontation. Look, I'm not going to pretend to be something I'm not. I'm not a dude that rolls around looking for a fight. I'm not a guy that gets my crew together and then goes out for retribution. I'm not about that life. Look at me. Do I look like I'm about that life? However, I am about a life where if you're going to get with your crew and you're going to handle your business in the street, that before you do that, you first run through the kitchen and get what you need. A frying pan. And that, clones, is how a story goes from good to great. It was a good story when it involved a gambler named Tay being pissed at Florida for being a
garbage
football team. But now when one of those garbage players allegedly brings a frying pan to a throwdown, man, that's when it's the stuff of legend. If I'm understanding it correctly, there was an initial confrontation. The players left to get their weapons. Why do you do that? Either you want to hurt somebody, maim somebody, or intimidate somebody. But you have a reason if you're strapped. But this guy was strapped with a frying pan. What? His wok didn't want any of that? Dude couldn't roll with a casserole dish? Were you going to a brawl or to an episode of Chopped? Hey, man, you grab that BB gun. Paint it to look like a real gun. I'm going to grab a spatula and one of those hand-cranked egg beaters. Ain't nobody jacking with me. Not with a hand-cranked egg beater. We're going to jack some chumps. Bring the freaking blender, too. My man Jason Bourne blowing up a house with a magazine and a toaster. Can't believe that this guy showed up strapped with an iron pan.
That's Jason Bourne.
Hey, look, I don't know about you. I'm not a gun guy. It's just not my deal. And I'm not looking to... Don't at me about that either. I'm not saying anything at all. I'm just saying that's not my deal. I'm also not about that life. That's not where I live. But now, since I don't have a gun, now I've got a frying pan on my nightstand. Now I've got a frying pan under my passenger seat. No cooling off period. No need for a permit. for a concealed pan. Man, I see this guy working. Dude has a pan, and he's not afraid to use it. These dudes probably should just empty out their kitchen. Grab a few frying pans, rollers, wooden spoons, spatulas, pizza cutter. Let these chumps know exactly what time it is. Man, this whole thing is so ridiculous. So Florida Gator. So Florida Gator. From a gambler calling the Gators garbage.
Garbage.
To a Gator rolling up a cookware. I'm not even sure what's true and what's not. I just know I want it all to be true. I want this to be true so badly. I want so badly for somebody to show up at a confrontation with a frying pan in one hand and a saucepan in the other hand and a turkey baster in their sock. God, I want this to be true. Dude showed up to a brawl with a frying pan. Man, I'll never forget that one time I saw that dude. I saw this dude once. I don't want to go meta world peace on anybody. But I was watching. I wasn't playing. I wasn't running. But I saw this one local run. I saw this dude go right into a guy's heart with a meat thermometer. And he left it there to gauge this guy's temperature of his heart. Dude, I've never seen anything like that in my life. I can't get that out of my head. This dude literally, in the middle of a game in a local run, went meat thermometer in a guy's heart and said, yeah, man, 99 and climbing. Then this other dude ran off the bench with a waffle iron and tried to put this guy's head inside of it. I grew up in a tough town. Mean streets of Calabasas. 818 for life, yo. All right, we're coming off the rails a little bit. That is a wacky, wacky story. T.I. joining us. All right, so what about this? A dire need to succeed. Right now, you're a Grammy Award winner. You're a multi-platinum recording artist. You're a Tony Award nominee, actor, producer, father, real estate mogul. I mean, you've done pretty much everything there is to do. So if you wanted to, you could put your feet up and you could relax, but you're not doing that. Why not? Where does that dire need to succeed keep coming from now? What gets you out of the out of bed in the morning and motivated at this point?
Man, I have to feed the fire. You know, there's a fire inside of me, and if I just let it go and I don't continue to fan my flames or feed the fire, it'll go out. So I think that's what wakes me up, man. I just want to continue to feed my fire.
All right, then. In the past, you and I have talked about your love of the Atlanta Falcons. The Super Bowl is going to be in the ATL. The Falcons have got the potential to be playing in the Super Bowl in Atlanta, but you've said that you made a conscious decision, Tip, not to support the NFL at this point. Why is that, and how tough a decision was that for you to make?
Well, at the time, it was an incredibly tough decision. I think that the rights were being violated, you know, by trying to punish American citizens for a silent, peaceful protest that is not in any way associated to one's patriotism or to one's support of the flag. However, it is directly associated to bringing awareness to the amount of lives that are being lost in communities at the hands of law enforcement with no accountability to follow. And if kneeling for the flag is more important than addressing these loss of lives to the NFL, at the time I felt that I couldn't support them. However, it has been brought to my attention that since I believe last Thursday, the NFL Players Association and the actual NFL have come to an agreement that they would not punish players for their peaceful protest. And I'm really just monitoring and just keeping myself abreast as things progress and see where it is at the beginning of the season.
T.I. joining us. So really quickly then, that said, and you're kind of, it's fluid for you, so you're monitoring this. What's your reaction when you hear Jerry Jones say, the Cowboys, their players will have to stand for the national anthem, and he really doesn't care what the league or the NFLPA has to say about it.
Well, you know, man, I wasn't ever a big Jerry Jones fan or a Cowboys fan to begin with. I'm a fan of some Cowboys players, but as far as the entire team, you know, I kind of always got that kind of vibe from Jerry. However, though, I think that, you know, to each his own. You know, this is America, and just like he decides to make that decision, I think we as consumers with a certain a certain sense of morality, we have to decide whether or not to support that.
We're talking to T.I. He's got a brand new show coming up on BET tonight. Tip, I got to ask you about this great story from back in the day, and it's so good that I want to run it past you to make sure that it's real. But the story goes that when you first started to make money, your uncle said that he wanted to do something with it. So you gave him some money, and then sometime later on, you drove to a house that you knew pretty well that had been completely rehabbed, and there was a family living in that house, and your uncle said, quote, "We did that." What was that house like before, and what was your reaction when you saw how much it had changed?
Well, the story is absolutely real. And the house was, for lack of a better term, it was dilapidated. You know, it was what we all know as a crack house. And my reaction when I saw the change that had happened to it, I was floored. I couldn't believe it. The amount of money that I gave him was enough to create the sort of change that I saw. And I was excited and looking forward to the opportunity to do it again and again.
I was going to say, that was not a one-off.
Which so we did.
You guys have. You and your uncle have done that for 65 houses in and around the area where you grew up. So, like, why is that a passion project, and what does it feel like to have that kind of impact?
I mean, it became a passion project, but just because I think that as a teenager, due to a lack of options, you know, some of my activities contributed to the deterioration of those houses in that community, or of that community period. So anything that I can ever do from then up until now to try to reverse some of that detriment, you know, I always make myself available to do so.
Got a couple more minutes with T.I. Tip, I got to ask you, we're a few weeks away from the 15th anniversary of your second album, Trap Music, which was an iconic album, and in the eyes of many, it put you as the founder of Trap Music. When you look back on that album and everything that came after that album, I mean, 15 years out, what kind of thoughts do you have as you look back?
Man, I think that it's amazing that, you know, it has become so broad, and that so many people celebrated and so many people have contributed to it. And although, you know, trap music did kind of open the door for the rest of it, it still doesn't take away or negate the many contributions from all the others that have gotten it to where it is today. I think that, you know, that deserves a round of applause, just, you know, because I don't think that I alone did everything that it took to get it to where it is today. All I did was open the door and, you know, make the initial contribution. I think passing the baton is key. You know, you can't win no one racer can win a race. So, I mean, I'm just proud to be a part of it.
You know, it is really quickly in sports, like if a pitcher throws a perfect game or a basketball guy, a player goes off for 50, the question always is, before the game, did you know something special was going to happen? Let me ask you that. Before Trap Music dropped, did you know how special it was and the impact it might have?
Well, to be honest with you, man, I can't say when we were inside of it, we didn't see it as that. We were really just, you know, we just wanted to make music that people who live the same kind of lifestyle that we were living could relate to. And we had no idea that it was so many people living their lifestyle. I think that due to the crack epidemic and all of the people who, you know, were affected by it, trap music became, I guess, an inspiration. You know, it kind of showed people that, you know, if Tip came from this walk of life and he started with these humble beginnings, and he was, you know, due to a lack of options, he engaged in this kind of activity, but he made something of himself, then so can I. And it became the same thing for Jeezy and Future and the Migos and everybody else who contributed to the culture. And it just spread out because so many people were able to relate to it. And I think that's amazing.
Still grinding, still hustling, still producing, still creating content. Brand new series, The Grand Hustle, tonight, 10 p.m., 9 central on BET. My guest, a Grammy Award winner, T.I. Tip, so good to have you back. Good luck with that TV show. Always good to get caught up with you, Tip.
All right, now.
NBA, just when you thought that free agency couldn't get any crazier, it did. In fact, crazy doesn't do it justice. It literally went insane. As I mentioned, Vince Carter, for some reason still known by his 90s gloss when he did extremely freaky things, Vinsanity, is headed to the ATL, as mentioned, to learn to fly with the Hawks.
And I went to learn how to fly with some Hawks.
Corny, man. So corny. That was not Vince Carter. That was Dwight Howard. Being Dwight Howard. Being a goober. Now, when I say old man Vince, I say that with the utmost reverence for that old man. Not a lot of 41-year-olds are playing in the association. And by not a lot of 41-year-olds, I mean only one. Vinsanity. It's hard to tell what's more amazing about that contract with the Hawks. His age, or the fact that he's willing to go play with the Hawks. Woj reported that deal on Twitter yesterday and didn't mention anybody holding Vince at gunpoint. So dude is not only going to the ATL, he's going there by choice. He's going to play for the minimum at age 41. Now, in case you forgot about Atlanta, they were dead freaking last in the East. Not dead last in the West, but dead last in the East. They're in full rebuild right now, a full rebuild mode. The highlight of their season probably last year was some lady spraying liver bile out of her mouth through her hand all over the court. So it's not like Vince is grabbing some pine on a contender's bench. Dude probably is their best player. So does my man just love the game so much that he's willing to run the floor with a guy in Trae Young who was born the year that Vince was drafted? Or is he in some kind of whack standoff with Dirk Nowitzki to see who can own the record for most seasons in the league? I think there might be something to that, because last September, Dirk was on episode 4 of my podcast, and I talked to him about that very thing. Dirk, only two guys from the 1998 NBA draft are still in the league, you and your former teammate Vince Carter. So are we talking about some kind of a standoff between a couple of legends? And if so, who is going to blink first?
So, you know, Vince actually said he's going to try to make it longer than me. So we'll see how that works. You know, I get along with him great. We text occasionally, and every time we play them, we talk a little bit of half court and, you know, about some of the issues and some of the stuff that comes up as you get older and how many pills you take before the game and sort of stuff like that. But he's a great guy, and I love him, and he's been actually really, really efficient still lately, and he's been fun to watch. So I don't know who's going to make it longer. I definitely want to play this year and see how it goes. And you know, I signed a 2-year deal. I'd love to play those two, but we'll kind of have to see how year one goes.
I challenge any of you and all of you to find me a better human being than Dirk Nowitzki. God, he's awesome. I'm so glad that I had a chance to reset that. That was episode 4 of my podcast. The beautiful thing about the podcast, they're all there. You can listen to any of them anytime you want. That was episode 4. Now, in terms of Vinsanity and Dirk, this isn't just a couple of dudes staring each other down. We're talking two dudes staring down the all-time record for most seasons played in the NBA. This year, they're both going to move into a 5-way tie for most years ever. And don't get it twisted, it's a hell of an accomplishment. And if one or both of them can somehow work somebody for a contract for 2019-2020, then one or both of them is going to own that all-time mark. And one or both of them can say they had the longest NBA career ever, which is incredible. Now, the difference between these two, of course, is that Dirk has jewelry. Vince does not. And the one record Vince does have right now is most seasons in the league without a ship. It's not the guy's fault. You know, that whole thing about always holding guys to the standard of, yeah, well, you're not a champion. Charles Barkley, you're not a champion. Vinsanity, you're not a champion. Yeah, but there's a bunch of scrubs walking around who are. It's not always in the cards. It's not always meant to be. It's beyond them. It's not Charles's fault that he's not a champion. It's not Vince's fault that he's not a champion. However, these labels stick. It's an ugly label, but it sticks. And right now, Vince has been in the league longer than anybody else without that ship. So I see my man working. Except you don't want to keep extending that record, right? And if you're going to Atlanta, you're not going there to win a championship. Here's hoping that the Warriors can find this bag of bones a bench spot in 2020. So he doesn't have to hang it up with, I don't know, the Knicks. Dave Dorn is my guest. Dave, nice to have you back. How are you?
Good, Jim. How you doing?
Doing great, Coach. Let me ask you first, you're coming off your best season of your time at NC State, and I jump right into that because the school had a record 7 draft picks, Dave. You were second most wins in school history last season. The list goes on. A really good year. So how is life for you right now, and what's the vibe like around the program these days?
Well, it was a great year. Really proud of the coaches and the players and the development, you know, it's taking place here in our program. And really, you're just trying to improve upon what we've been doing. You know, I mean, it's last year was last year, and our goal is always to raise the bar in our program. And we have a fun group of guys coming back that have really worked hard. And so it's just continuing to build on what you've done and not forget, you know, because you had success, what you went through to get there.
Dave Dorn joining us, no doubt about that. And I'm sure that when you work that hard, it's got to be so rewarding to see it pay off for everybody involved. I know you're looking forward and not looking back, but when you arrived, I can make the argument that maybe part of what you were doing was making NC State relevant once again. Now you're more than relevant. So what does the next step look like?
It's sustaining it. And you know, our goal is to win a championship here, and however long that takes, it takes. But you know, I think sustained success in this profession is very challenging. And you know, you're going to have years where you have injuries, and you know, you deal with the adversities as they come. And so to be able to maintain a level of not just being in bowl games, but being in upper tier games where you can win them. And we've won 3 of our last 4 bowls, just continuing to grow on that. And being a program that has sustained success over a long period of time would be something that I think everybody here would be proud of.
We're talking to NC State head coach Dave Dorn. You know, I want to talk to you about what you have this year and what you're looking at, but your journey to me is really interesting in that you played your college ball at Drake, and the plan was to go to medical school and become a doctor, but then one summer when you were in college, your former high school coach asked you to lead some 7-on-7 drills. What do you remember about that moment, and then how did things change for you after that?
Yeah, it was a tough phone call to mom telling her I wasn't going to be a doctor and
right.
Going to be a coach, I can tell you that.
Great, right.
You know, I was just kind of at a point where I was a little bit lost and wanted to try to figure out how I can continue to be involved in a sport that really helped me as a person. Wanted to be involved with young people and help them become better versions of themselves and reach goals, and wanted to continue to be around science at that time because it was my favorite subject, and I felt like being a coach and a teacher would allow that. You know, at that time, I had no idea it would lead me to where I am today. But just being on the field with young people and seeing the influence and the way I could help them, it was very rewarding, and I knew that was kind of my calling after going through those drills that summer.
Interesting, because what you just said, in part answered what I was about to ask you, because when you start off as a high school assistant in Kansas, and then you go back to Drake, and you're working your way up, when you were first starting out, I mean, what was your vision? Was it, I just want to stay in football because I enjoy this? Or really, did you picture yourself in a spot like the one you're in right now?
You know, immediately, no. I was just happy to have a job, and you know, trying to make ends meet. And you know, I was going to grad school in the mornings, and I was working at night bartending and bouncing and trying to make enough money to have food to eat, you know, and I was coaching in between it at a high school. And so at that time, I was more in the survival mode and enjoying, you know, my life. And as I got to the college, back to Drake where I played, and learned that I think I could be really good at this if I give it everything, and I was enjoying it so much, I started to set goals, and you know, one of them was to be a head coach by the time I was 40, and I was able to do that, and you know, never knew where it would end up, but that was where I wanted to be, you know, from a head coaching standpoint, and been fortunate to be able to build on that.
You know, and then in terms of being where you want to be, for instance, last season, as it wore on, your name started to come up in connection with other jobs, but you did choose to stay at NC State. So I'm curious, how did you approach the decision-making process, and ultimately, what made you stay?
Well, we love it here. I mean, it was never a thing of wanting to leave. It was just wanting to have a situation not only for me, you know, from a stability standpoint, because as we all know, coaching is not a very stable profession. But to be able to recruit the way I wanted to recruit, I felt I needed 5 years on my contract, and I wanted my assistant coaches to have, you know, improved salaries and better stability in their lives as well, so that they would want to stay and have that retention. And I was able to get that here. We love Raleigh. My sons, I have three sons, love their schools. My wife likes her community that we live in, and there's no reason to leave when you love where you're at. And I feel like I can take this program to the same places I could have taken other places that were interested in talking to me. So it was more about just having the opportunity to stay and have the contract that we felt like we needed to continue to build.
Yeah, so much to like right there. And then I would imagine another part of the excitement, part of the reason to stay, the return of quarterback Ryan Finley. So where is he right now as a player, and how excited are you about what he can still become?
Yeah, I mean, we've built a really awesome culture here, Jim, and it's fun to come to work. I mean, it really is. These players are such great guys. They're good leaders. They're good people. They work so hard, and you know, you truly feel like every day you're having to give your best, or you're letting them down because they work so hard. And Ryan is a part of that. You know, this is his team. He wants to be the best quarterback in college football. It's part of why he came back. He wants to lead his football team. I mean, how often are you going to say that you're the leader of an elite team, you know? And he relishes that. And so it's exciting to be around a guy like that and around a football team and a culture like that that we've built. And that was a big part of coming back. I love these kids and have put a lot of time, blood, sweat, and effort into helping them become better.
Hey, Dave, he says it point blank. His goal is to be the best player in the country. How close is right? So how close is he to that already? And ultimately, do you expect him to be the best player in the country this year?
You know, I can't really focus on comparing him to other people because I'm not in the circles with those other people. All I can do is help Ryan become the best he can be. And that's not coach speak. I mean, that's truly what we believe in here. And I know what Ryan's things are that he wants to improve on and to try to help him. And Coach Drinkwitz, his position coach and OC, I mean, they're lockstep on the things Ryan wants to improve upon. And as good as he was last year, knowing that he can improve, he has every opportunity to do that with, you know, the talent pool that's out there at quarterback. I mean, he's extremely intelligent. He has a grasp of our offense that's elite. He has good chemistry with the players around him, and they trust him. And so we just got to continue to keep him focused and humble and hungry and help him get to where he wants to be and see where he stacks up at the end of it.
NC State head football coach Dave Doran joins me for a couple of more moments. So, of course, Dave, when you're in the ACC, that means you're going to have to deal with Clemson. I mean, you could argue they've got to deal with you. In fact, I would argue that because the last 2 years, you've been within two plays of beating them. So does it feel like you're right there with them, or do you look at it as it doesn't matter until you do beat them?
No, I think they're the team to beat. I mean, they've earned that. They've, you know, in the moment of truth at the end of those two games you mentioned, we did not make the plays we needed to make, and I'm sure they would tell you they made the plays they needed to make, and that's why they won the conference. And so it's our job as coaches, it's our job as players to find those plays, to find those inches so that we can say that we're, you know, the best team in the ACC. We're not yet, and they are. And so, you know, kudos to them for earning that, but it doesn't mean we're afraid to play them. You know, we look forward to that opportunity to get on the field. They have a great staff and a bunch of really, really good football players, so it's going to be an awesome day when we get out there with them.
You know, one last thought. You, in your position as a leader, you're looking to inspire and motivate any way you can. And, Dave, I saw you had Inky Johnson address the team last week for a Real World Wednesday. I don't know. You've done this a long time. I've done this a long time. It'd be very hard for me to come up with somebody who's more unique, more fascinating, and more inspirational than Inky. I had him on my podcast earlier this year. He is absolutely amazing. What was his message to your team, and what did you want them to take away from that talk?
The guy's incredible. I mean, I have so much respect for him, and he tells his story so well. And he relates, first of all, with our players. You know, he sat in their chairs, he played, and he was a really good player. And he came from nothing, and he didn't let the greatest obstacle in his life change his life, you know. I mean, he found a way to make his life better and successful and happy, and I think it's just incredible perspective for guys that, you know, complain about their shoes being too tight or not having enough gloves, and then you have a guy come up there that, you know, doesn't have an arm that works the way that he wants it to work, and he's got the greatest life in the world, if you ask him. And the way that he talks about, you know, perspective and, you know, how much you should relish every time you get out there and what it should mean to you because you don't know when you're going to lose it. It's just incredible to hear a person like him talk, and it moved our team, it moved our staff, and it was a pleasure and an honor to have him here.
No, I agree with you. I've never seen anybody quite like that. And not only has it not slowed him down, I think he'd even argue that he wouldn't change anything, that he's better for it. He lost his arm. He was within 10 games of being probably a first-round draft pick and realizing all of his dreams, but I think he'd argue that I wouldn't change a thing. It's actually a good thing.
Yeah, he said that to the guys, and it's incredible to hear that, you know, and I think it's if anybody can make their day better, YouTube the guy and listen to him. I mean, he's a life-changing person, and I think everybody in the world would benefit from his mental toughness and his story.
NC State 9-4 last season, 6-2 in the ACC, but it all starts up once again on September 1st against James Madison. Dave, great to visit with you. Thank you very much. Good luck. Hope we can do it again in season.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to be on your show, Jim. Thanks a lot for your time, and go Pack.
Matt in L.A. Hey, Matt, how are you?
Romeo Van Snagger. Thanks for the line. Hey, my favorite cutlery of choice to weaponize, the barbecue footlong fork. You know, a good reach. Anyway, unlike Kale Smoothie Sunning, I'm coming in here to make the show better as usual. Sans that gross cauliflower ear, of course. But your boy Matt in L.A. has somewhat of a bone to pick with the CBS Sports Network programming, guys. Hey, guys, you own the TV rights to the biggest sports show of the year. Not that abortion called the ESPYs, the Smack Off 24. How about you give us some daily rerun action like Raj, Dwayne, and Shirley, fam? I mean, I'm a fan of the Pirelli World Challenges, the Super Trofeo North America, and the Mikey Garcia boxing saga as much as the next guy. But can I get another dose of that Smack Off 24, damn it? I mean, we're getting trumped for the 1992 Canadian Open. We all know, God rest his soul, the Shark got over on Canada. The NHL gets over on Canada every single year. We've seen this movie. That's tantamount to the upcoming C-list production of Zoolander 3, Beauty Instead of Brains, starring the Canadian cuckolds known as Myler. So, yo, CBS, execs, let's do this. Come on, man. Get it together. Get that Smack Off on rerun reel daily, damn it. That's all I got, Jim. War Boomer and Geo killing it daily, preceding the jungle. And Unwar, Kale the Shake Weight Son, and coming in with garby-ass calls 2 years in a row on the best day of the year. Outro.
Outro, Matt. See ya. God rest whose soul? Greg Norman? Dude, the Shark's still alive.
Jerome in Nashville. Let's keep moving. Hey, Jerome, how are you?
What do you say, King of the Jungle?
What do you say, man? How you feeling?
The cat that just called 2 calls ago from Cleveland. Paraphrase, you know, Jim Mora. Cleveland? 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 Come on. When you have pro teams and you have pro championships, you have pro athletes, you can talk the smack. But you're from Cleveland, okay? Boston is now the city of champions. Get used to it. Deal with it. Okay? And until you step up and bring home some hardware, you earn the right to talk the smack. Not just because you're from Cleveland. Okay? Bohica, buddy. That stands for bend over here. It comes again. I'm out, Rome.
He's Jerome. Jeez. May I never hear that phrase on this show ever again. Gotta be kidding me about that. All right, Jerome. It was fine up until the very end. It was fine until the Bohica. All right, I'm out. I'm going to take a break and come back.
I do have a question, Alvin. First of all, Alvin, were you engineering that day? How did that not get buzzed? Where was the hammer on that? How was that okay?
Good night now!